the VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 580, recorded on July 20th, 2020.
Welcome to the 580th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 413th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinzer.
I am Scott Turk.
And I am Jonah Fowle.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, we didn't go last week, and I haven't posted the previous two episodes because they were orally a mess and I'd have to really edit them. So it's sort of like this episode will come out before those episodes come out. The previous two episodes will come out as soon as I fix them, because there was all sorts of weird audio artifacts on them. So it's like I have to get busy on Audacity to fix them.
Mm.
But, which is fine, because all the big news are coming out this week. I mean, we already had Ubisoft's presentation, and we're going to be talking about Ubisoft soon. And Microsoft's going to have their big announcement on Thursday. And one thing I know about the presentation from people who are in the know, one, Lockhart is real, and we're going to be discussing that as well. And two, Microsoft's not going to announce the price until Sony announces their price. And the thing is, I believe it is because Microsoft will wait until Sony announces their price, and then they'll match it.
Yes.
So, there's not going to be any of this undercutting. Like, remember, the PlayStation 3 was announced at $500 to $600. That killed it. Microsoft announced theirs at $500, while the PlayStation 4 was $400. That killed the Xbox One. And, you know, we're going to be discussing all that, because that's part of the news that's coming up. So we're going to be talking about what we've been playing, and I've been playing Ooblets.
What do you think about it?
It is literally Pokemon meets Harvest Moon. They're not even subtle about it. It is just friggin' Pokemon and Harvest Moon. Actually, you know, it's less Harvest Moon and more like my time at Portia. You know, it feels more like that.
Like a chill game.
Yeah. But here's the thing. The Pokemon, the Ooblets, they never fight. They have dance battles.
They do.
And,
that's cool.
It's basically a card game. So when they level up, you get new abilities, and it's basically playing a card game, you know. So you get the amount of stamina and different dances, and then you just have them dance, and all the Ooblets come around and cheer them on, and whoever wins the dance battle, you get the losing
Ooblets.
What? What did you say?
I'm telling my daughter I'm recording because she was talking to me.
Oh. you get the losing Ooblets seed, so you can make an Ooblet from that. And I will say, this game is for kids. And I mean that in the best way possible. This game is extremely for kids. It's intended that if you plop a 6-year-old in front of it, they'll know how to play.
Mm-hmm.
In the best possible way. I can sense it's sort of a deep game, but there's a lot of not talking down, but talking on a level for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying yes, it's yuh, Y-U-H, or nuh.
Okay.
The only problem I have with it, and keep in mind, this is early access, this is not the finished product, is that it's very hard to keep track of your quests. I would like it if there was a way just to look at your journal to see what the quests you have. I haven't found it. It may be there, but it's hard for me to find. If it's hard for me to find, it'll be hard for a kid to find. So I'm pretty sure that'll be some of the feedback they get, and they'll fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, this is a game that, you know, parents can be safe to give to their 6-8-year-olds and let them have at it. It's sort of like, what was the game I said? Oh, Yonder. It's like Yonder, the game I sent you, Scott, in terms of skill level. You know, Yonder is very hand-holdy. It, you know, it's like it acknowledges it's probably made for kids, so it's, you know. So it's not like ultra sophisticated, you know. So it's a lot like on that level, Scott.
Well, I mean, it was not an aggressive game at all. There was, I don't even remember if there was enemies. You just kind of wandered around and did your thing. Kind of, it just was an extremely chill game.
Yeah, I mean, Ooblets has quote unquote enemies, but the enemies aren't really fighting. I think they're getting away from the idea that Pokemon is basically cockfighting, you know. It's like you have the dance battles. No one gets hurt. Which is fine. I'm not a fan of cockfighting in Pokemon. It always seemed kind of hypocritical to me, especially the first movie in which they say, violence is evil, but violence is what we do. It's very cartoony, and again, in the best ways. You know, so I would recommend this. Adults might get bored because there are other games that are like it, you know. I mean, if you're an adult, you may just say, well, I'm just going to play Stardew Valley, you know.
Uh-huh.
This is probably my first Harvest Moon. Because you do have to, you know, you have to water plants, you have to keep them alive and all that stuff. There's things that I'm pretty sure they're going to, like, it doesn't tell you how to find wood. I mean, you probably get the idea, well, if I take the hoe and I start bashing this dead wood over here, I'm going to get wood. But, you know, I would imagine there would be some sort of pop-up next time that says, this will provide the woodlets, and this will supply cloth, and this will supply, you know. Again, it's very simplified, but not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So if you want a game that's Pokemon and Harvest Moon, mix in a little Dance Central, and there you go.
I like Dance Central. That's a nice mechanic to have.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Actually, if you like Pokemon cards, except the cards aren't attacks, they're dance moves. it's sort of like following the plot of Breakin', you know? Who has the sicker dance moves? Anyways. You were
saying? It really does, like, make me think of... For better or worse, like immediately when I look at it, like I played it a little bit this last week too, and it made me think of Step Up.
Okay.
But like Pokemon.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they have that sort of challenge. Like who's the better dancer? Let's get everybody in a ring. All these Ooblets getting around in a ring, and they're just dancing at each other.
And there's straight up like moves that like there's dance related status effects like hype. If you get more hype, then you can do then you have more points for moves.
Or there's another one that allows you to steal the other person's star points because it's basically like Magic the Gathering, except instead of life.
Because you're not
stars.
Defeating your opponent, you're building your star power.
Yeah.
And whoever builds the better star power first, like
whoever gets 20 first, just like Magic.
Whoever builds up their star power to 20 first wins the dance fight.
Yep. There's one that steals their star power, you know. And
that way it's an extreme, like, it's not even just like dance fights. Like, it is an extremely non-violent game.
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, I'm pretty sure the fights in the very beginning are very, very easy. You know, you just play the card, boom, you win. I'm pretty sure that the cards are going to get more tricky, like they'll start stealing stars from you or making you lose hype and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In the very beginning, it's very easy. It'll be interesting to see how the difficulty ramps up with that mechanic. I haven't seen the penalty for losing yet. I don't.
It's also very interesting that in the farming mechanic, you literally, like, you grow everyone, you seemingly you grow every one of the monsters from seeds.
Yeah. And like I said before, if you win a dance battle, the losing monster gives you a seed to grow their monster with.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to see is, I wish there was a game that was like Dragon Warrior, Monster Rancher, in which you know, you raised animals and you also crossbred them. Not like Pokemon, which is a weird thing. No, they actually did crossbreeding animals in Dragon Warrior Monster Rancher. And you know, and there were secret combinations that you had to figure out.
Yeah, like, Scott will know what I'm talking about here. In Animal Crossing New Horizons, they actually have a pretty, like, in-depth system for flowers where, like, you have to plant certain types of flowers near each other, and they'll cross-pollinate and create a different color of flower. That would be also kind of cool if you, like, planted two different monsters near each other and perhaps, like, you got a different seed from the from their growth that created a rare type of monster.
And, you know, that also sort of indicates to me that this is, really is aiming at kids, because it's basically the equivalent of saying the stork brought your brother or sister. There's no sex. They grew. they grew from a plant.
There is a little farty noise that happens when they drop the seed for you.
Yeah, like in Minecraft where they just rub noses, hearts go, and then, oh, there's a baby.
Like I said, some adults may get bored if they, you know, because it's not the most complex thing in the world. I mean, some may enjoy it because it is basically very zen to play, because I won't say there's no challenge. I'll just say that it just requires time from you and not as much energy as other games do.
Some people like the very laid-back games. They're not into action games. They're not very good at them, and they like games where
Minecraft comes with a mode in which there's no monsters, no nothing. You're just building, and that's it. Nothing else happens.
Yeah, but then you don't get to get those mob drops. There's a peaceful mode and a creative mode.
I actually started Undertale for the first time.
How do you like it?
It's fine. I haven't... let's see. I passed... what's his name again? Papyrus. I already dated Papyrus, and I went on to the next world, and that's where I stopped for now.
Have you kept yourself unspoiled, or do you kind of know what's happening?
Yeah, I'm doing the pure pacifist route.
That's not what he asked.
No, what I was asking is, have you been able to keep yourself unspoiled against what happens in that game, or do you kind of know where it's going?
I know where it's going. I know that actually if you go with a genocide route, the game will never let you remember.
Okay, that answers everything I need to know.
I know bits and snatches of the ending, but I don't know the specifics.
Undertale is an intensely different game when you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I know
that's
there's
true.
A room in the very beginning that you can only go in if you did a pure pacifist route.
That is one of those games that I wish I could go back and play again without knowing anything about it.
Yeah. Did you see the Game Grumps play of that
game? Yes.
That was entertaining. I saw that, yeah. And the Switch version was neat because there was a room that's made for the Switch where you have to have the controllers and you use the controllers to open the door. And I just thought that was a neat mechanic they included for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole battle mechanic is nice too, where you have to move the little cursor to dodge stuff.
Yeah. And the other game I've started playing, I've only gotten I haven't even gotten very far in it yet. I've started Hollow Knight for the first time as well.
Ah, it's also a very good game.
I mean, I did the Dead Cells thing. Now I'm doing the Hollow Knight thing. Those two games are inextricably connected to each other, even though they're different developers and different types of roguelikes.
Hollow Knight, it is... I don't know. For lack of better terms, I find the story to be pretty good. I don't want to give anything away because there are twists and turns, but it is a thing.
And what's interesting is the version of Hollow Knight I have is the very special edition, the Voidwalker edition. Or Void Something edition.
Mm-hmm.
So Hollow Knight came out only in 3 years ago, so it's not an old game.
Mm-hmm. It's also one of my favorite soundtracks on one of those types of games. It just comes right at you from
the
menu screen.
Yeah, the Void Heart edition. So that's the version I'm playing.
Yeah.
So, it includes the base game and its 4 content packs.
They're still working their way towards Silksong, which everybody is hoping will be coming out sometime within, before 2020.
Speaking of new packs, have you seen the new No Man's Sky expansion? Basically,
yes.
They just said, we're gonna make this into an Alien game now. As in Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien game.
Yes. No Man's Sky has been like going buck wild with their additions to the game for a while now. Like, this is easily the most ambitious of the bunch that I've seen so far. But before this, they did Living Ships, where you could like grow a ship, a biotic ship, yeah, that that you could then pilot through space. They had exosuit mechs, which you could find a schematic for a mech suit and put it together. And then before that, they had one where they just gave people an Easter. It was like an April Fool's Day joke where they gave people a music player, and it legitimately had an entire like music creation suite within the music player for you to build build bass musical themes.
By the way, yesterday they announced that since joining Xbox Game Pass, there's 1 million new players on it.
That's impressive. I'm glad, like, they've put in the work to turn it around. You can't take that away from them.
And there's another news item, which I'm going to bring up right now so before I forget it. People have been going off on Madden. We already know about Fix the Franchise Mode, you know, that hashtag that was 2 weeks ago. But today, Madden fans have been outraged that the one thing that EA cared about was to change a player's strength stat. And they're going off on the fact that EA has very skewed priorities right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that they really, and we never discussed this, the other thing that people have been going off about is the inclusion of the yard game mode. And A, they were annoyed when it was first announced because it's like, wait, you're working on this? You don't have time to fix the franchise, but we have time to do this. And then, like a few days ago, they because it's been out in previews, right? People have been playing the beta. The yard has the players in pads. So it's not like NFL Street. And it seems like it's going to be sort of a my team sort of thing. You know how 2K does My Team?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically that's what Madden is doing. And that is really pissing a lot of Madden fans off. And the thing I'm wondering is, you know what? Yeah, you're going to be screaming and hollering about this, but if you actually buy this thing, then you're part of the problem anyway.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, they're just going to have to reboot this series because they've kind of just like put themselves on a path where it's just.
How do you reboot football? I don't know how you
just start from scratch. I mean,
yeah, like get rid of all the systems you've built, get rid of all the modes you've built, and just build a football game from the ground up.
Now, there's something else that happened today, which may be a warning shot across EA's bow. And a lot of people are finding this incredible. SportsCenter tweeted, "Here's to the best football game to date." And they posted NFL 2K5. This is SportsCenter. Now, here's the thing. NFL 2K5 used SportsCenter's license, right? They had they had Chris Berman and all that stuff. But even so, I mean, Madden NFL 05 had the Tony Bruno show, which was cool too. When you have ESPN basically saying, hey, look how great this 16-year-old game was, mm-hmm, from a competitor. That's, yeah, it cannot be interpreted as anything but an attack on EA. You can't interpret it any other way. Because what the fuck is a 16th anniversary milestone? If it was like 10th anniversary, 20th anniversary, even 15th anniversary, but 16th? No, there's something else going on there. And the
it does
fact
seem
that,
random for them to just bring it up now, though.
And we can probably assume what 2K is doing with their quote-unquote non-simulation football game. It has to be an NFL Street game. Has to be.
Hmm.
Has to be. Because for them, for men to include something like the yard, that's sort of like them saying, well, we got to do our own version of it before they do it. And I'm pretty sure it'll be, I don't know, NFL Street, I'm worried, will be like 2K's My Team with virtual currency up the ass. Although with something like NFL Street, I could also see them making a single-player version and a multiplayer version. I don't know, but say what you want about NBA 2K. You know, I never buy it because it's crippled by virtual currency. The underlying game is still very, very good. The meat of it is still very, very good. While Madden runs on pre-rendered, you know, on pre-rendered animation, you can tell what a play is going to be just from the way a defender twitches. Say, oh, yeah, it's going to be a sack because that the player just moved there. It means no matter what I do, it's going to be a sack. Or an interception. Or a blocked field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you know, Madden NFL 2005 was a really good game. I may shock you, but I was actually buying Madden, not NFL 2K, during the back in the day. I actually preferred Madden over NFL 2K because it wasn't brand loyalty. It was just more like it felt better to me, you know? And there were tons and tons and tons of options. But, you know, that doesn't say I didn't also, you know, here's the thing. When NFL 2K5 went to $20, I bought it anyway. Because why not? Why not have both? Mm-hmm. It's $20. Madden is $50. NFL 2K5 is $20. I'll get both. You know? And there were so many features. And if they will never do this. But if they released a backwards-compatible version of Madden NFL 2005, I would buy that. I mean, the PC version is out there. Try and buy it. It's like, God, it's people know that people want to play Madden 2005. It's like, if you go on eBay, it's really expensive. So, but yeah, I'll play 2005 on my PC. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing the detective game Black Sad.
Yes.
Yes, I got it on Steam, and it's a game where you play Detective John Black Sad, and he's investigating a murder. And it's really interesting because all the characters are animals, and so racism gets...
This feels like... I saw videos of it. It was like, oh God, this is a furry's wet dream.
I guess. I don't know. It's
furry's wet dream. You watch that. It cannot be anything but.
Well, there's an actual story and characters, and it's not a voyeur game. I've seen what voyeur games look like. This is not that.
But here's the thing. Just so you know, it's actually based on a comic book series. Mm-hmm. From Spain.
Okay.
Which actually had Hitler played by a cat. It was actually a reference to Mouse. You know, Art Spiegelman thing?
Mouse.
And you had Joseph McCarthy as a rooster. it's based on a graphic novel series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems to be a very legitimate detective game where you get to find clues and you have this mechanic where you put the clues together to come up with a deduction. They also have these little cards, these sports cards that you can find, and you put them in your little Hall of Fame collection bragging rights of how very thorough in investigating the areas that you are finding the information. And also your choices matter. You have dialogue options and, again, actions to choose from, which will affect your storyline. There's a stat thing that's called Your Black Sad, and it tells you what kind of ratings you get as you go through the story. You know, are you romantic or lonesome? Are you observant or obtuse? Are you, you know, so it kind of, it tells you how you're doing, you know, like a personality type of the character that you're playing. So your choices will reflect in that and also in story. And I'm having fun with it so far. It's good voice acting. Yeah, I'm having fun with it. It does seem strange having the furries there. They do make mention of that, saying like, oh, you know, like there's a lizard guy and people don't trust lizards, for, you know, for some reason. And they also bring up racism where they talk about black and white, but they're animals, so it just seems odd.
Takes place in a version of the 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
I don't know when that came.
In our world, or at least, you know, like New York and all that stuff, but everybody's a furry. Or, you know, everybody's an animal, at least.
You should try games like The Sinking City and the Sherlock Holmes games by Frogwares.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they do clues is really good. I mean, a lot of games, you know, like L.A. Noire, you just have to hover over it and then make assumptions. No, with Frogwares games, you actually have to do some thinking when putting together clues and to solve a mystery.
I know there's a lot of Sherlock Holmes games on Steam, so it must be...
Yeah, those are by Frogwares, and they're best known for Creepy Watson.
Creepy Watson.
Do you know the Creepy Watson? So here's the thing. When you're playing the game, Watson has to follow you around because he's Watson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this could lead... You're walking, you turn around, and Watson's right there. Do yourself a favor, go to YouTube, look up Creepy Watson.
Okay.
It's a full-on meme. And hey, guess what? They're making another Sherlock Holmes game in 2021. Cool.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And it's for next gen. Or ninth gen. But yeah, I mean, they also did Sinking City as well. Which could have been better, but here's the problem with... There's a problem when you make a Lovecraftian game that's not scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a problem. It's like... Lovecraftian thing is to be scary.
Yeah, it was just because they did Dracula Origin. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I like Dracula Origin. That was fun.
Yeah, they... That's them. They did that.
Okay.
So, TJ, what have you been playing that you're allowed to talk about? Besides duplets.
Did you play Trials in the Sky yet?
I have not gotten there yet. No, this last week I was playing around on Killing Floor 2.
Oh, God.
I fiddled around with it before, but I've actually not taken a deep dive into it. I had a bunch of time on my hands this last week, so I took a big jump into it. It's fun. I really do like the progression system of the classes in that game, because there's like 10 different classes. And like, it's really interesting how some of them go for like sharpshooter class. That's like a sniper rifle class. And like, initially not too great against a whole bunch of zombies. But you start to level up and you start to figure out what works, and like suddenly you get, like once you start to unlock
you know
perks,
actually you know maybe you should describe what the game is first. It's a co-op,
right? So Killing Floor 2 is a team-based person versus enemy zombie survival wave game, like Call of Duty Zombies, but like with a class-based system, a whole bunch of maps, and like boss characters at the end of like a certain amount of waves. So again, like everybody specializes in a certain class. There's a demolition class, which has access to a demolition class, and sharpshooter class have access to two entirely different sets of viable guns. Demolition obviously specializes in explosives, so they start with a grenade pistol. They can work their way up to an M16 with a grenade launcher. They can work their way up to a rocket launcher. Meanwhile, sharpshooter class starts with like a carbine that's really good for like getting headshots. but they can work their way up to like a scout rifle, or they can work their way up to a rail gun that can shoot through multiple enemies at once. So it's really fun figuring out the classes, figuring out where they fit, because not every class does everything well, and you need to figure out like what fits against various certain types of enemies. And
did you play the DLC that has you fighting against Big Daddies?
I didn't.
Okay, so one of the DLC actually has BioShock's Big Daddies in them.
Yeah. And like at the point where it's at right now, there are like a ton of maps for that game.
Oh, they just released a new DLC too.
Yes. Because they just put the game on Epic Game Store, and with it they pushed a new update.
On a side note, Epic sent me an email bragging, you know what, we're now part of GOG Galaxy 2. Now, they were always incorporated, but now they've synergized it, so it's on a deeper level. So now Epic is with Galaxy 2.0.
That's good. When I say deeper, I guess because I know GOG was linking games that were on Steam to their account as well.
And Microsoft. And Epic too, but now it's – see, I think there's a difference between them just linking the games, you know, because they detect it.
I mean – I don't mean linking because they detect it. I mean linking it like you own it there. Now you own it here too.
Yeah, I think
like
that's – they just did that with Epic now today.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, which – more interconnectivity is good.
Yeah.
The more that these things as long as they don't drag each other down, because there are certain features on like Epic that I would rather there are certain features on GOG that I wish Epic had, but it's just not there yet because Epic Game Store is still a relatively new UI.
I'm sure they're going to develop
Epic is functional enough for me. The only thing I don't like is that I wish you could click on a game that you own in your library and not immediately start playing it. You have to click on the four bars, which will allow you to look at it, you know, its stats and stuff like that. Otherwise, mm-hmm. If you click on it, it'll immediately launch. When did you start playing Killing Floor 2?
I played it a little bit years ago.
Yeah, because it came out in 2016. That's why I'm wondering.
But, like, I only just really took a deep dive and started actually, like, leveling characters up, like, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Which game mode do you play? Do you play the 6-player co-op or the 12-player versus?
I play the PvE survival mode mostly. I'm trying to raise my characters up right now to move from hard difficulty up to there's hard, there's suicidal, and then there's Hell on Earth. And it recommends that you get your players up to a certain perk level before you get to the harder difficulties. So right now I'm raising up a few different classes in hard mode. But I'm having fun with it. Like I have to say, like, there's enough variety in that game that even though it's like essentially doing the same thing over and over, which is just killing a certain set of like certain different variations of zombies and then a boss, there is enough variation in there to just like keep me wanting to explore. So that's cool. And it'll be fun when I get up to the next difficulty and the things get even more challenging.
I'm pretty sure Scott would like to bring up the fact that Shin Megami Tensei is coming to the Switch.
I would too, because that's dope.
Yeah, there was an Nintendo Mini Direct where they revealed a couple of different games coming out, or at least some DLC for Cadence of Hyrule, a wrestling game, and Shin Megami 3 is being remade, and then they're making Part 5. It's interesting they picked Part 3, so it makes me wonder if the 5 stories related to that. I don't know if they're each stories are independent, like Final Fantasy. Each Final Fantasy is by its own little story, or if it's like a ongoing story through all the games.
I think they may just want to be putting their best foot forward, you know, the most acclaimed of them, mm-hmm. or if that's the one they have the most rights to, and they don't have to worry about any headaches with other licensing.
Okay,
here's the thing. You know what's never been re-released? Which annoys a lot of people. Silent Hill 4, The Room.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's never been re-released, and a lot of people love that game, not because it's a great game, but because it's different than the rest of the Silent Hills.
It's very weird. Like, the amount of interaction there is in the like, it's essentially two entirely different games.
Yeah, first person in your own house, apartment, then wandering around outside in third person.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, when you're in your apartment, you're in your save zone, and you don't need to have spoilers to know that the game's going to take that save zone away from you at some point.
It makes me it's really upsetting.
Oh, it is. It's Silent Hill. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It can get scary.
The story sucks, though. I mean, the underlying story of it is not very good. The reason for all everything is just like, whatever. We're not going to spoil it. It's just, whatever. But it is. But you know, the first person and the third person thing do work to make you nervous and scared and piss your pants.
There's a certain item you. There's like no way to. Well, it's an old game, so I'm just gonna go into it. Eventually, you start getting like manifestations that happen inside your apartment, and you can't like access fighting controls inside your apartment. So you just kind of have to watch them happen. And there's only like one or two items that can stop them from happening, and so it's really like. It's really sort of like this powerless feeling when it happens the first time and you have no idea what to do about it.
By the way, we should mention one of the most obvious things that's actually on the friggin' cover of the game, and that is when you're in your apartment, your front door is chained and you can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it may be your safe space, but also you can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Then you just find out that there's a hell portal in your bathroom and that's...
in your toilet. Which everybody would agree is a hell portal. So what else? Have you been playing anything else?
No, mostly just killing Floor 2 in my spare time this last week.
So, there was something else I wanted to talk about, but we'll just have to talk about it another time. Let's talk a little about the ID Xbox 2020 Summer Spotlight series, which me and we should watch the videos. We did not watch number 6, though. That came out afterwards. And there are some games that caught our eye. I know that let's go with Summer Spotlight 1. I know that TJ was interested in Skatebird, which is basically a clone of Tony Hawk, but you're a bird.
Yes.
That sounds cute.
It is very cute. You know, here's the thing. All the animations are exactly like Tony Hawk. Like when you wipe out, the bird will just go on the floor like the human does in that.
This might be the only skateboard game I'd ever bought a kid. This is very adorable. Like, yeah, he's flapping its wings to extend your jump.
But it is the developer is Megan Fox. No, not that Megan Fox. And I actually spoke to her, and she said, you know, yeah, I was a huge, huge, huge fan of Tony Hawk, and I just wanted to make Tony Hawk. She grew up with Tony Hawk, so why not make it?
That's very cool.
Yep. Another game that caught a lot of people's eyes are Dead Static Drive, and it's had its eye. People have been watching that one. Simply for three words, Grand Theft Cthulhu. Picture wow. Grand Theft Auto. And here's the thing, it's not like the Grand Theft Auto top-down and not like Grand Theft Auto third-person. It's Grand Theft Auto isometric, except you have to deal with Lovecraftian horrors.
So. Yeah, I'm looking through there. There's a bird game where you're shooting at various birds.
Yeah, that's the Falconeer, and basically that's Panzer Dragoon Orta.
Yeah.
Except with a falcon. But you do get to fight dragons in it.
That's awesome.
Then you have Trash Sailors, which is basically Don't Starve with the same aesthetic, except you're on a raft.
I see Forgotten City is also on here. I remember that from last year. That's good to see that is still coming.
And by the way, all these games we're mentioning, they're not just on Xbox. These are indie games. Forgotten City... has a time travel mechanic in which you have to keep on going back in time, back in time, back in time. And you really can't fight anybody. All you can do is turn them into gold. And for an indie game, the graphics are really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing many of these are on Steam, PlayStation, probably some on Switch.
We already talked about Carrion. Carrion's coming out in 2 days. I can't wait. for those who don't know, Carrion is where you play a Lovecraftian blob and you eat people. Basically, if you ever did the ending of Inside, except you were red and evil. But
a lot less bloated too.
Yeah. But DJ, you really liked Aria and the Secret of Seasons.
Yes, it makes me think of the best parts of some of my favorite Zelda games.
Yeah, I took a look at that as well. Very
so
cool.
For that game, for those who don't know, you're a girl or a woman. I can't tell. It's anime.
Definitely
and
girl.
It's
She's
a,
like.
It's a third-person puzzle platformer, and the puzzle part is that you can change the seasons around you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can change it from spring to winter, and each season will have an effect. Like, if you're in a winter season and you turn it into summer, the armor of one guy will melt off, and then you can properly attack them. That sort of thing.
And it's not like the entire level. You just change, like, a sphere of influence within, like, the room that you're in. And, like, you can do – and it wherever you're at is, like, the center of the sphere when you have that effect. And it's really cool to see, like, what kind of puzzle mechanics that they were showing off from that.
And one of the cool things about, by the way, about the ID Xbox 2020 Summer Spotlight videos is that they were all narrated by the developers and telling you what they were doing, why they did it, that sort of thing. You know,
that makes sense.
Well, I mean, a lot of times trailers will just show off gameplay and that's it, you know. But in this mm-hmm. case, it was basically, I'm the developer, this is why I made the game. Then you have Everspace 2, which has been out for a while, but it's coming to, you know. I mean, Everspace was kickstarted, Everspace 2 is kickstarted, and for those of you who don't know, it's a space sim, except this space sim really stresses the RPG elements.
Mm-hmm.
You've played it, though. You played Everspace, right, DJ?
Yeah, I played it at PAX South this year. It's extremely ambitious. Like the amount of explorable galaxy that they have in that game is pretty incredible. Like how vast it is.
And then we have Sail Forth, which I like to call. They decided to make Zelda the Wind Waker and combine it with Sea of Thieves.
Yes, it's almost entirely the sailing element, which is like, it looks very relaxing. There is some fighting. There is like combat in it, and apparently you can amass a crew and actually build up a fleet of ships.
Yeah, the developer also said they're really stressing the physics of the game. I mean, it's a little bit in Sea of Thieves in which you can orient your sails to catch the wind. But with Sail Forth, you got to do everything. It's just, you know, you have to catch at a thing, deal with a prow, that sort of thing, you know, so it's a lot more complicated, which is part of the game. I mean, there's a lot of games that are like that, in which, like, Quap or Surgeon Simulator, in which a lot of the game is the physics. I think that's going to be the case with Sail Forth. But, you know, the reason why I said Wind Waker, because it has that very bright, cartoony look. Not quite as cartoony as Wind Waker. But it is, you know, it's not like Sea of Thieves in which you have really realistic waves, you know. And then you have Super Meat Boy Forever, which is Super Meat Boy, except this time you get to play as his girlfriend, too.
Uh-huh.
The thing that I find interesting about Super Meat Boy Forever is that now that it's finished, Edward McMillan can go back to Mugenics, which is a cat genetics game in which you have cats having sex, having kittens, and breeding them for genetic. Like, there's like 34 quadrillion different types of cats that you can have. Edward McMullen once said that he actually had one cat have a disease which he called cat AIDS, and he kept on giving it to the other cats. You know, so there is that randomness and, you know, that thing to detail with cats. You know, you could actually breed cats that are actually dangerous. So hopefully he said that now that Super Meat Boy Forever is done, he can work on that full time. So, what else is there? So, Cake Bash, it's basically Super Mario Party except with pastries.
Yeah.
I really liked. I'm gonna interested to see what how the Universum plays, because basically Universum is Populous except it's on a round globe. There's another game that attempted that, not Spore, but something else. Although it does have sort of a Spore type of look to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I always like those games that give you that amount of creativity, but then there's going to also be the people that take that creativity and do weird things with it.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people.
Humans are weird.
Yeah. A lot of people are excited about The Ascent, though. Did you cover that, TJ?
Yes, I did. It looks interesting. I don't know if I'm starting to feel like the cyberpunk genre is getting a little bit saturated.
Just a little? Are you sure?
Just a little. Just a little bit. I mean, it feels like every single season that we have like a presentation, like it feels like we're at that point where it's like, what's going to be the cyberpunk game this time? Now, granted, there have been some cool stuff to come out of it. Ghost Runner from 3D Realms is one of my favorite things to come out of this whole this whole spree of new cyberpunk games. But man, like people really, 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 really are trying to cash in on that whole 2077 release.
So here's the difference, though, with The Ascent. It's an action RPG that's not a fantasy game.
Yeah, it makes me think of Helldivers, like to the T, where Helldivers was like mostly action and you had some skill trees and you could specialize a little bit and buy some weapons. It is a cyberpunk game where like you might have like a hacker, or you might have like somebody who's a melee expert, or somebody who focuses on guns. But it makes me think of like the co-op multiplayer element of it makes me think very much of like what if Helldivers but cyberpunk.
Yeah. So here's the other thing quickly. Cyber Shadow, it's basically a shoot 'em up that's very, very NES.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks nice. So the Summer Spotlight 6 we did not watch because it had not been released yet. Do you know Void Train?
I don't.
Okay, so Void Train is a crafting survival game, except you're building a train, and everything happens on the train. Then the train moves, you get out, you know. So it's basically, and everybody's excited about this game. It's basically an action survival, what's called crafting game, except you're building a train. Think of, oh God, what was the name of that movie again? You know the movie I'm talking about. The one that was just constantly going through a snow plower. Oh, damn it. Do you remember it was a post-apocalyptic train movie?
Hmm. I don't know if I know that one.
Oh, come on. It was,
does not Snowpiercer. Sound familiar at all.
Snowpiercer.
Never
came
heard
out, like,
of it.
7 years ago.
Oh.
So, basically, that's what this game is. The other game that people are really interested in is Yon Yon Sword 7. Have you seen that game?
I saw that. It looked very cool. Looks it's an action RPG and looks a little. It does remind me a little bit of the Tenchu. Tenchu Dying Twice. But I don't know if it's. I guess less dark. But I don't think you have a robot arm this time. And you're wielding, it looks like a large two-handed sword, and you're fighting all these different Asian-themed, right? Chinese? Yeah, Chinese mythical creatures.
Yeah, it's sort of like Dark Souls
Maybe
Tenchu,
Witcher.
Except it's more of an RPG.
Witcher. I was going to say more Witcher than Dark Souls, because Witcher goes after...
Well, let's put it this way. It's a tactical combat game, and you just can't swing your sword back and forth and expect to defeat people.
Right. Well, you're supposed to be tactical in Witcher as well, but I know there's an easy mode on that.
I know, that's what I'm saying, though. It's
okay.
It's just very it's a very tactical game.
Mm-hmm. It, yeah, it looks very good.
I'm going to be demoing Night Sword 2, which is basically I would like to say it's the duck game, except top-down, and everybody has a sword. Then there's Backbone, which, speaking of furries, this one is even more of a furry than the game you played.
Look at this one.
Yeah, you go to Backbone on Steam, you're going to say, oh yeah, this is even more furry than the game I was playing. It's a Kickstarter game, so, you know. As a matter of fact, you know what? I think the characters are a lot like the ones in Black Sad.
Yeah.
I wonder if this game is ripping off Black Sad. Because it is, again, it's a dystopian noir adventure game. Set in this case, it's Vancouver, not New York.
Yeah. It's side-scrolling. It kind of reminds me of the games like Blackthorn and the old Prince of Persia. Because I see some stealthing and some climbing up on top of a building, and there's talking dialogue going on. So that, yeah, it does remind me kind of a mix of a mystery game with some platforming a little bit. Looks interesting. And then it's older graphics, I guess retro graphics, people would say. But that looks good. Might be interesting.
Finally, there's Wintermoor Tactics, the club. Just think Harry Potter meets Final Fantasy Tactics. That's basically it. It already came out on Steam.
Interesting.
Yep. Anyways, we're going to move on to the actual news. Because, like I said, right now it is basically E3. Everybody's doing their showcases, you know. And Ubisoft showed off their games. Let's talk about the games they showed off. First things first, Far Cry 6, yeah. The only thing we know is that Giancarlo Esposito plays the villain in it, and that's basically it.
Yes.
And so they had that great trailer, but, you know, it sort of left me cold because, yeah, I get it, you know. This is the same game they've been making from 3 till now, basically.
Yep, pretty much.
Well, I know that actor, and I saw Breaking Bad, and he did an excellent job of playing a villain in that, so I think that'll...
Oh, Giancarlo Esposito has been a lot of stuff.
Right. He has been in a lot of stuff. It just was a very memorable role in Breaking Bad. So
he knows how to play a villain, that's for damn sure. He also knows how to play a hero, too.
Mm-hmm. That was the other thing
He was in Do Right Thing. He was best known for Do the Right Thing, actually.
I don't think I've seen that.
Seen Do the Right Thing?
No.
Okay.
there was something. I thought he was in a vampire movie or something. I can try to remember. Anyways, it's fine. We can.
You know what he did a lot of? He was a singer on the Electric Company for every single episode. All 779 episodes of the Electric Company.
Wow.
Villains in Far Cry games, I'm like, this is where I'm like sort of split on having somebody this high profile as the villain of the game. In most of Far Cry games, you see the villain like maybe one time, and then you don't see them for the like 97% of the game.
In this game, he's playing your dad.
Okay, so you should be seeing him more, I would hope.
Well...
And that's what I'm worried about. That's what I'm worried is that it's going to be another Far Cry game where you have this standout character, but then you never see them again.
Well, here's the thing. They learned a lesson in Far Cry 3, and they didn't, because in Far Cry 3, the interesting character was offed almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Damn, what was the character's name? It was batshit crazy. I forgot his name. But they realized, let's keep him alive in 4, the interesting character. So you see him in the beginning of the end of the game.
But that's the thing, though. It's like you see him at the beginning, you see him at the end. You don't see him for, like, the rest of ever.
That does feel like a waste.
And that's just the way Far Cry games are built.
Okay.
And so, like, I'm worried that's what it's going to end up.
Well, I mean, the big villain in Far Cry Primal is the fact winter's coming. Then you had they had actual gameplay for Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
I've seen that. It looks very good. You get to choose between male and female, and then you go around doing all these little quests. And I saw a little bit of gameplay where they went to a wedding, and you have all these drinking games where you get drunk and you're trying to shoot stuff. And there's, you know, little story stuff too.
Yeah, Viking rap battles.
And then you had Watch Dogs Legion. I've never been a fan of Watch Dogs, but the concept, the gameplay mechanic behind it seems very interesting. So what happens is that you're not one single person. You recruit people, and everybody that you recruit, and you can recruit anybody from the game world, except, of course, for the big bad. And they all have different abilities. Like, if you get a construction worker, he gets access to construction work. He knows how to use a constructor. If you get a hacker, they know how to use drones. They can use drones. You can recruit one of the people who works for the big bad, and they have access to the ability. It's very hard to do, but you know they can just walk right in because, hey, I work for this person.
Mm-hmm.
You can hire a little old lady, and she has her own different powers, you know? And when you go on missions, you get to select which ones go on the mission. And there's all these ways you can accomplish a goal. So
yeah, and agents like have permadeath, so if one dies, then you lose access to them forever.
But fortunately, there's plenty of people out there. So here's the thing about Ubisoft and political stuff. A lot of the times, you know, something will look really political, and no, it's not. Like, remember Far Cry 5? It was supposed to be, oh, this is really going to attack, you know, white nationalists and all that. No, no. The villain is diverse. You're diverse. The only difference is they have guns, you have guns, and you'd rather use their guns on him first.
Mm-hmm.
And the villain even survives and becomes not a hero in the expansion, but someone who you work with. The guy who did, who's doing Watch Dogs Legion, he is very political, and his games have always been so. He did Far Cry 2. He did some other game. I forgot them, but, like, so
Far Cry 2 is the best one in the series. I'm just going to put that out there.
So it's a good chance that Watch Dogs Legion is not going to hold back. And, you know, the entire message of it is totalitarianism is evil, which I think everybody can get behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Having a watch state, something that we're concerned about in real life. So it's actually pretty present right now. So
mm-hmm.
We're not going to discuss that. But the problem I have is that the Watch Dogs demo, the original one, seemed really great. It's disappointing. Watch Dogs 2! It's disappointing. The fact that the guy who did this is behind Far Cry 2 and other games makes me think, you know, this one may actually live up to the promises. So we'll see. And as a matter of fact, Watch Dogs Legion is the one that's coming out the soonest. It's coming out on October 29th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of disappeared off the radar for a long time.
Sometimes that's a good thing, because Cyberpunk disappeared off the radar for a long time. So did Red Dead Redemption, Red Dead Redemption 2, Half-Life 2, you know. So, we'll see. Anyways, getting back to my Ubisoft. So the first news item. Ubisoft executives quit over misconduct allegations. This comes to us from CNBC. Ubisoft unveiled a slew of new video games, which we just talked about, on Sunday, looking to stir up excitement for fresh titles after several top executives resigned over misconduct allegations. The French publisher, known for big game series such as Assassin's Creed and Far Cry, held its Ubisoft Forward event online Sunday. It was due to the major press conference at the E3 Gaming. It was going to be at E3, but of course E3 is not around. The flashy event, digital event, failed to impress investors. Sales of Ubisoft slumped more than 9% today, after the company announced the departure of three top executives on Saturday following a probe into allegations of misconduct. Ubisoft announced that its chief creative officer, Serge Hascoets, Scandinavian names, managing director for Canada, Yannis Mallet, were stepping down and were leaving the company with immediate effect. CEO Yves Guillemot will take Hascott's place for the interim and oversee a quote-unquote complete overhaul of how the firm's creative teams work, according to a major press release from Ubisoft. Cécile Cornet, Ubisoft's global head of IHR, also stepped down. I'm pretty sure Cécile Cornet wasn't involved in any misconduct. It's just that when you're HR and people are quitting because there are 15 or dozens of people claiming sexual misconduct, you're not doing your job.
Yep.
This has come as a major Me Too thing has been going around the video game industry, which has been a long time coming. If you want horror stories, just ask anybody who worked in video games before 2000. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that these games were announced at their basically their E3 event, and stocks still dropped. 9% too. That's a heavy amount. That was like, what happened with Nintendo that caused the stocks to drop? That
New Horizon wasn't going to come out until March, and they went down 1%, which I guess was a billion or 3 billion or something. And I'm sure their stock has gone way up since then, because the game sold like crazy.
There was something else that happened that just pissed all the investors off.
Before that, when it really dropped.
And I remember Nintendo's CEO had to publicly apologize effusively and all that stuff. I was expecting him to cut off a finger or something.
Are we talking about Joy-Con drift?
No, that was recent. No, we're talking about a while ago.
Oh.
Anyways, but yeah. So, I don't know if there's much we can say about this, except 9% is a lot.
Yeah, it is. We're talking about a factor of like a tenth of the entire share that you owned in that just gone.
Is it actually because of the misconduct, or is it because they feel the games aren't?
No, it's misconduct.
Okay. Well, also, a lot of these figures that have stepped down have been core parts of Ubisoft's machines for a long, long time.
Keep in mind, this isn't just a few women. This is dozens of women who spoke out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, these are considerable legends at Ubisoft that have been basically forced out of the game because this is serious stuff. And like, there is, if this, it, like, I don't know what goes on inside of Ubisoft, but there, I have every reason to believe that Ubisoft would not have let these guys go unless they were seriously in danger of losing whatever came afterwards.
I always said the Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag was a cry for help from the development team. Because in that game, you're playing a developer who works for a large Montreal company. Guess who that's supposed to be? And it's like life is hell there. And this, you know, the other major news going on that has nothing to do with video games, maybe it does have a little bit, you know, what's going on with Washington, you know, the football team there is like, there's, people are leaving left and right there too. And the thing is that, you know, it's actually overshadowed the name change to whatever they're going to change it to. It's sort of like it's going to force the owner out, Dan Snyder. And that has been a shit show for the past 20 years. And you know what's interesting is that when a company is a shit show behind the scenes, usually stuff is a lot worse than it could be. In sports, it's really magnified when you don't have good company culture, if it's toxic culture. And it makes me – you know, we already hinted at this before, but, you know, Far Cry 3, 4, 5, and all – like Primal and New Dawn, they're all the same game. You know? There is no – creativity at Ubisoft right now. None. Because what have they been doing? They've only been doing three franchises, Far Cry, Assassin's Creed, and Watch Dogs. And what do they all have? They're all the same open world crap. I'm not going to say necessarily crap because I know some people like those games. I'm just saying they're making the same game over and over and over again. What happened to Rain Man? Remember Rayman? They used to do that.
That used to be their main game, I thought. Or at least there was a lot of Rayman.
And you know what? And some people also noticed something. You know what was not discussed at Ubisoft Forward? Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yeah, that is something that just completely went missed.
And even so, that's also another open world game. And it's like, I'm glad there's a complete overhaul. Maybe we'll have some different types of games. You know, not everything has to be a friggin' open world game. I mean, Ubisoft, the only franchise I can think of that is not an open world game, that and they, it was but the problem here is that it was basically the last game, but, oh, damn. You know, Excitebike 2.0, the games they made, Trials. The Trials games. That's the only thing that they made that wasn't an open world. And by the way, the last Trials game was the last one, according to them.
Mm-hmm.
There is no creativity at Ubisoft. And I'm hoping this major overhaul will also have an overhaul on what they're making.
Yeah, because if their chief creative officer is gone, then you're going to get somebody else who will be a different creative direction. So that, I think that'll obviously change because they're going to get a different person.
It's like they made all their games from the open world equivalent of RPG Maker. You know? Different setting, different dialogue, still the same core gameplay.
Hmm.
Anyways, now that we've finished bitching about Ubisoft, go ahead, TJ. Take the next one.
All right. Microsoft has stopped making the Xbox One X, from CNN. Microsoft is officially discontinuing the Xbox One X and the Xbox One S all-digital edition. The Xbox One X, released in November 2017, was designed to run games with 4K resolution and was built as a high-end version of 2013's Xbox One. And now, as the new Xbox Series X approaches its holiday season, its holiday 2020 release, Microsoft is finally pulling the plug. Microsoft may also be discontinuing the all-digital Xbox One S to make room for its cheaper next-generation Xbox codenamed Lockhart, which is rumored to announce next month. Its release date is unknown.
So here's the thing. I'm willing to bet you anything that the Xbox Series S or Lockhart or whatever it is going to be the same price as what the Xbox One X is.
Yeah, and I was having this conversation with someone the other day. If the Xbox Series X or Xbox Series S or whatever
the Lockhart for now
or whatever the Lockhart is, if it's a comparable price to the Xbox Series X, then there's literally no reason for the Xbox Series X to exist.
Or yeah, Series X is a comparable.
Sorry. Yeah. I hate their naming convention. I really do.
Yes, but I agree.
Well, here's the thing. You'll no longer have to worry about that because there won't be an Xbox One X and an Xbox Series X at the same time.
But if the Lockhart is comparable in price to the Xbox One X, there's literally – the Xbox One X then becomes redundant.
As a matter of fact, I will tell you something else. I'm willing to bet you the Xbox One X will be like $100 at around Black Friday.
Hmm.
It'll be $100 because
that'll
people
be
will buy – it'll be Xbox One X, $100. Xbox Series X, let's pretend that's what the Lockhart is going to be called, $200 to $250. Xbox Series X, $400 to $500 or whatever the PlayStation 5 is going to be priced because, like I said, my sources say Microsoft's not going to price these consoles until Sony announces their price.
Right. And, like – the follow-up to this is that Xbox also announced that the Series X generation of consoles have confirmed that they will feature 100% backwards compatibility with the Xbox One.
Similar note, Sony has increased the production of the PS5 to 10 million.
Yes.
Which tells me they really think that this coronavirus is going to go on for a while.
And for those who don't know, It's in direct response. They initially put their estimate – like earlier this year they had a story come out that they were concerned about production values and concerned whether they would be able to keep production up because some of the components for the PS5 were proving to be very expensive. And so estimations put them at 5 to 6 million by the end of 2020. So to move to 10 million, they're almost doubling their production for this coming season.
And it'll be interesting because I remember the last time Sony did something like that, it was with the PlayStation Move. And you could drown yourself in the number of unsold moves. So it's a really bold statement to say we're going to make 10 million of these things. Here's the thing. Sony, I hope these are not defective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
There's two things that people think have changed. A, it's COVID. And gaming at home has become far more – the demand for it has become far more. And so Sony is trying to meet that demand head on. Two, PlayStation came correct with some exclusives recently. And this might not appeal to many of the people in this room, but Demon's Souls Remastered
– yeah, that's a thing.
Demon's Souls Remake – that's a big deal for a lot of people.
Well, here's the thing. I was watching a documentary, What Happened with Demon's Souls. And when Sony played it, when the Sony bigwigs played it, they hated it.
Mm-hmm.
And they told From Software, yeah, whatever, you can go now. So From Software took their ball and went to, was it Capcom? No, Konami. Who publishes it?
Bandai Namco.
Yes. They went to Bandai Namco, and then Demon's Souls started to get word of mouth, and it started to, you know, get a lot of players who were giving it a chance, and suddenly it was the new hot thing. And then when Demon's Souls when Dark Souls came out, it exploded, and Sony said, oh, fuck. We screwed up on this one. We screwed up big time. We could have had Dark Souls be our exclusive.
Yep. And now they're doing Demon's Souls.
Yeah, Demon's Souls Remastered, and I believe From is working on it. Are they working on it?
It's a spin-off studio. It's a different studio that's working on it.
Oh, okay.
Let me pull
I'm
up
pretty
the.
Sure they're going to hope that they can make Demon's Souls series, much like there's a Dark Souls series, especially since From has claimed they're not going to be working on any more Dark Souls, which is basically them saying, "Nah, we're going to work on Tenchu now. We're going to work on different variations on the theme." Because they did Bloodborne for Sony, and what was the other game that they did for Sony? There was another game that they did during Dark Souls that wasn't Dark Souls.
Well, right now they're working on Elden Ring with George R.R. Martin.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about because they made Bloodborne exclusively for the PlayStation under Sony's request. So, I mean, all they did was replace all the souls with blood in it. You know, it's no longer soul gems; it's blood gems.
So the people that are taking up Demon's Souls are Blue Point Games.
Oh, God. Okay.
They previously worked on the remake of Shadow of the Colossus.
This is going to be like – I don't know. This is going to be like a completely different angle here. But I hear that, and I think about Bloober Team and them working on what is basically the next Silent Hill.
You know, I don't know.
They're using the same friggin' composer.
Right, but they did a very, very good job at the remake of Shadow of the Colossus. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I have faith in them. I think they can pull it off. And
a lot of people never got to play Demon's Souls, you know.
There's a lot of things about it that didn't age well. Like, that was – they really refined things. People don't realize how much they refined things in the move between Demon's Souls and Dark Souls.
Yeah, and here's the thing. There's a lot of people who played Dark Souls. Hey, man, this is too easy. What the hell?
For instance, like, Demon's Souls didn't have a – Demon's Souls didn't have a healing item that you just had on you at all times. So you had limited healing items that if you ran out of them, you were just kind of screwed.
But, you know, Dark Souls 2 brought that back a little bit with Estus Flasks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in which if you got killed, your humanity was taken away and you got less and less and less health points unless you took an Estus Flask, then you were back to human and you had a full points. But the problem with Estus Flask is that they're very, very rare, so you got to be careful when you're going to
use. You're talking about that humanity shard, but like the Estus Flask is actually like the healing item I was talking about, and that's been around.
No, I'm talking about the I'm talking about the humanity flask, the thing that gives you back your humanity.
Right, that's been an item since Dark Souls 2. You're correct.
Yeah.
But the Estus Flask is the healing item that I'm talking about that you have on.
I just got the name screwed up. I hear Dark Souls. I think Estus Flask.
And the Estus Flask was added in Dark Souls 1, and that became like From Software's like trademark. You always have this item on you type thing.
So here's the thing. For me, it's going to be a very easy choice of between the Xbox and the PlayStation. I'm going to get the Xbox because I have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, and all my games are going to transfer. Oh, by the way, that's the other thing, the announcement that Microsoft made. They said that all Xbox Game Pass Ultimate people will have xCloud for free on all their shit, which means you can play your Xbox Game Pass games or your Xbox Game Pass for PC games on your tablet, on your whatever it is. It doesn't matter. You'll be able to play it from there.
You know, I remember we were talking about how Microsoft is supposed to help Nintendo with its online stuff. When is that going to be happening?
Actually, here's the thing. Microsoft's been helping Sony because Sony does not have a cloud. So Sony is actually, from what I understand, are going to be using the xCloud themselves. They're going to be renting it out. I mean, it's not that strange because, you know, Microsoft pays licensing fees to use the Blu-ray with the Xbox One and Xbox One X. So it's not that unusual. But Sony got flat-footed on getting a cloud service. And, people are still wondering about Microsoft and Nintendo and having an online service.
How can Sony not set up their own cloud? They just get
because it's expensive and they're busy worrying about the hardware.
It takes a lot of technology that Sony has not spent years developing like Microsoft does.
That's true.
I guess they could go with Google, but Google I don't think will help them.
No, Google is their own set of problems with Stadia. They have their own giant to conquer right now.
They have two exclusives, Guilt and Strata. Although I hear people liking Guilt, just that it's a little bit easy. You know, just another riff on the Little Red Riding Hood mythos. Oh man!
I'll tell you what else.
Now suddenly I want to play The Path.
I'll tell you what else PS5 has right now that everybody is talking about today. Talking about Bugsnax.
I thought everybody was talking about the fact that the PlayStation 5 looks like a how did Yahtzee Croshaw put it? Like a crushed all sort.
What?
You know what all sorts? You ever see those candies which have layers on them? Those little petit fours that have layers on them.
Look like
licorice all sorts, and you'll see what I mean.
But
it looked like a Wi-Fi modem. Everybody was saying.
So this isn't in our news. I don't think. Let me have a look. But no, it's not. Jeff Keighley had his Summer Game Fest thing today, and it was all focused on indie games. And a big part of that was that the composer of the theme song for the Bugsnax trailer actually did like a full release of this. Like they did a full performance of the full song and then also released it on streaming platforms and also put out a limited edition single vinyl of the song.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I have never seen people so invested in a game specifically very based on the song that was put in the trailer with it. Nobody has any idea how Bugsnax plays. Nobody. There's no gameplay out there yet. But that song is catchy.
Oh yeah, by the way, the other thing is that they actually released the vinyl soundtrack for Untitled Goose Game too.
Yes, they did. And they're also doing a physical release of Untitled Goose Game.
The Bugsnax theme song is on 7-inch vinyl. And it's red.
And it's strawberry scented.
Yeah.
It's so A, it's cute. And B, it's like, wow. This is a lot of investment people are putting into this game.
I gotta get myself a record player again.
very specifically based on the song that they put to this game.
You know, it warms my heart that vinyl is still there. It's not 8-track. People still like vinyl.
I'm trying to Google these things, and I'm not sure if I'm... Okay, Bugsnax. Okay,
Bugsnax. Bugsnax.
Yeah. And what was that candy you said? All Sorts?
Licorice All Sorts. They've been around since the 1880s.
I have not ever heard of this.
You've seen them. You know what they are.
They look so fake and horrible.
You know what they are.
Sorts, like the sorting hat.
Well, what happens is, I forgot the name of the company that did. The company's still around, too. It was actually done by accident, and what happens is he dropped the candies on the floor, so he picked them up and just smashed them together and put them on a plate.
Gross. They look heinous.
Yeah, they do look heinous. I've never seen these.
Tiny little cakes with layers in them.
I've never seen this.
You've never seen all sorts?
Nope, never.
Gotta be kidding me.
I'm not kidding. I've never seen this.
You've never seen a Petit Four?
Nope.
Okay.
This is new to me.
Anyways, Bugsnax.
I can't believe you.
Okay.
Anyway, but the thing is, the PlayStation 5 looks like a giant smushed all sort.
It does.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the last news item. I'll just take this quickly. Blasphemous gets free Stir of Dawn DLC on August 4th, and this comes from PC Gamer. Team 17 in the Game Kitchen has announced a new expansion for their 2D Souls-like game Blasphemous at Day of the Devs, which I have not covered yet. I'm going to have to check it out. Day of the Devs, I mean. The Stir of Dawn. Oh God, why did they name it that? That's like the rural drawer, you know? The Stir of Dawn will launch as a free update on August 4th, placing it back in the pointy helmet of the Penitent One. The DLC will feature widespread changes to the game, including a new game plus mode, new bosses, reworked voice acting with a Spanish language option, which I would hope so. The entire game revolves around the Spanish Catholic mythos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that they'd have a Spanish language for it. New combat mechanics, including counter... As a matter of fact, I think people were complaining in the YouTube videos that, why isn't there a Spanish language version of this? As well as, of course, new areas, enemies, and bosses specific to horrifically kill you. And a particularly interesting addition is the new Three Penitents system, which appears to work as a series of modifiers to make the game challenging in different ways. Just think of the Halo Skulls thing, in which you can equip three different things to change the difficulty of the game. You know, it seems like the Stir of Dawn will work more as a remastering of the game than as a simple DLC, influenced a lot more of the core game, and fixing some of the main complaints against it. The DLC launches on PC as well as Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One as a free update on August 4th. For those of you who have not seen Blasphemous, is like a high school student who is completely goth and depressed making a game. That is what Blasphemous is.
It is incredibly grotesque, but like in a weirdly beautiful way.
It is depressed. It is like, if I was Blasphemous' parents, I'd have him see a psychiatrist.
Also, you know what the weirdest part of any of this is? They put a little snippet in it at the end of the game where, like, there's a dog in a village, and you can press a button and pet the dog.
Yeah, and this is like a game in which, to gain your health, or you rip the hearts out of people,
mm-hmm.
and they thank you for it as they die.
And you you grab them by the hair and chop at their neck with your sword until, like, multiple times.
And they're grateful. And they say, thank you, please.
And so it's, like, really, really weird that, like, 99.9% of Blasphemous is everything is tremendously grotesque and gory in this blood-soaked and unforgiving world of sin. And 0.1% of Blasphemous is press Y to hello up the pupper.
Yeah.
Well, at least you're loving something.
Earn your happy ending. But it's nice, like I said, this is more of a remaster than it is a DLC, basically.
Yeah. New Game Plus mode is something that a lot of people want in games like these, so it's good that they got that.
I'm willing to bet you they want the difficulty set to impossible. I'm pretty sure there's that.
Yeah, or
I guess
just
it's the Three Penitents,
you know,
system, yeah.
There's also, like, the opportunity to just play through the game with all the – with like, play through early parts of the game with all the tools that you picked up at the end of the game.
Yeah, Scott, just look at the trailer for Blasphemous on PC, and you'll think, oh, God. This game is the embodiment of Catholic guilt.
There's
and
a
by
part
the way, when
where,
I say Catholic, I mean Catholic. It is specifically Catholic.
Is this the game where you have that helmet and you, like,
yes,
spike
the helmet,
it?
The tall helmet.
There's literally a part where, like, he cuts open a dead giant that he just killed, and then he fills it the helmet up with blood and then just plops it back on his head. It's really, really grotesque.
Like I said, this is a high school goth student who is depressed, doodling in his notebook. That's what this game is.
This is, like, very Old Testament stylized.
Yeah. But it's not like Hatred, you know? It's more like
your initial oh, that's right, you're fighting a giant baby at one point. Jeez.
Hey, you know what? At least it's not as dark as The Binding of Isaac.
The
Binding
know.
Of Isaac revolves around the fact that your mom drowned you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, Blasphemous, like, pretty good Metroidvania, very intense.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the past few years, there's been a lot of Metroidvanias coming out. I mean, they just had the new announcement of the new Bloodstained game.
And that Ori came out, too, the new Ori.
Yeah. And here, you know, I'm thinking about, I think, like, the fifth generation. I'm wondering if all of these people had been so hot for 3D when 20 years later people would be mimicking all this 8-bit and 16-bit side-scrolling pixel action games.
Why don't you say it that way? I'm very glad.
We say, fuck 3D, we want 2D action, baby.
Yeah, now that you say it that way, yeah, because it's like,
look at Mega Man 9 and 10.
There are a lot of people that get motion sickness with 3D, so having more 2D games, you know, just feels nice. So that way, people that get motion sickness can play games again.
Here's
the
thing.
New games.
We're playing these 2D games, which would have been impossible on the old hardware. We're just taking it, painting the looks, and making them really fleshed out.
Yeah.
With stuff that they could never have done, like Parallax. And, you know, pseudo-3D effects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and orchestral soundtracks.
I mean, like, Fez could never have been played on an NES or even a Super NES, even though it doesn't look, you know, the look of it is very basic. But Fez uses a lot of mechanics that would have been impossible on old consoles. So, yeah, here's the Blasphemous, the game to play when you're feeling depressed and want to feel better because you're nowhere near as depressed as the people on the screen.
Yeah,
depressed, but these people are just begging for death. They want someone to cut off their head, and they're thanking them. Everybody is guilty of a sin in that game.
It's tremendous. And the ending is equal. Like, you think it can't get... You think it... There's points where you think it can't escalate, and then it does.
Yeah. Anyways, we do have listener feedback. Go ahead, TJ.
All right, and this comes from Ralph. This one is Rafe. On episode... Rafe?
Yep.
Ralph.
I thought it was Rafe.
No, it's Ralph.
Okay.
That's the German version of Ralph.
Okay. Ralph on episode 577. Hi, guys. Thank you very much for the episode. I appreciate the work you put into every episode every week, and I am sorry that I can't listen to every episode as much as I want to. As fast as I want to. Regarding the topics, I played a lot of WoW, Damn Drug, and since last week...
That's why they call it World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Yeah. And since last week, a lot of MTG Arena, because the new set is out, and it's awesome. In addition, I played some Ori and the Will of the Wisp, and a lot of Last of Us 2, and of course, some rounds of Jackbox Party, which was really fun. Space Invaders. I grew up with this, and it was my first game on Atari 2600 in the 80s. But paying so much money for a colored version, nah, don't think so. Maybe if it will come to Steam and there will be a sale.
Isn't there an Atari arcade with a...
Yeah, I keep on getting these messages about the new Atari console coming out, and each time I get it, it's like, why are you making this?
No, I mean, like, have you seen how much that thing is going to be? It's like $390 to pre-order that thing. Oh, my God.
You better have something better than Atari 2600 games on that thing. I'm telling you that right now.
Oh, I mean, like, you'll be able to put pretty much an entire Steam library on there because it uses a customized Linux processor.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to thank Microsoft and Sony for saying, yes, we're going to use SSD.
Yes.
Because my SSD, everything just runs like that now. It's like
oh, yeah.
Day.
Talking about the difference between like a 5-minute load time and a 5-second load time.
Yeah. By the way, did you see – I think I pointed this out. Did you see this, the system specs for Microsoft Flight Simulator?
Oh, my God. I heard they're absurd.
Well, here's the thing. I can run on my top of the line – on my high-end machine – the medium, but to run at the best, among the things you need is an NVIDIA 2080.
God.
But I will say this. Every video I've seen of Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 is absolutely fucking incredible. It is beyond belief. It is so feature-rich. It's looking at X-Plane 11 and saying, oh, yeah? Watch this, motherfucker. And everything that you have to buy expansions for that thing, guess what? It's free on ours. It's free on ours. You know, you don't have to, you know, and it's just it's got – every plane has 200 points of physics on it for dealing with interaction with air and turbulence and all. I'll have to send you guys a link. I'll put it in the thing. It is like your jaw will drop and – the video is made by someone who actually is a flight instructor, and he's saying, you know what, this game, you can use it for flight instruction. Completely. I'm not going to get into it. It's going to be a long discussion. I'm just saying there's a reason why it's really beefy on some of this in the highest system requests.
Yeah, they're talking about absurd draw distances on that game. And not only that, like – they're using mapping technology utilized around the entire world to one-to-one recreate terrain.
The only thing they're not – they have to do the personalized stuff is for the airports themselves. And they've got like I think several thousand of them, but there are 57,000 airports in the world. So, but they got some of the wackier ones, you know, those really short – airfields, which are on the side of cliffs and stuff like that.
Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about when we say GeForce 2080, my laptop can run just about any current game at high settings with relatively little issue. I still only have a GeForce GTX 1070.
Yeah, I have something similar on my desktop. Yeah.
So they're talking about a real chunky machine, like the kind of thing that you spend.
It costs $3,000 friggin' dollars. No, not that one. I mean, the 2080 I think costs $800.
Wow.
The other card that they're suggesting costs $3,000. The 3080.
Yeah, the kind of machine that you're talking about putting together around that kind of card would cost you $3,000 probably minimum.
So it's like this is the crisis of flight sims.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, it's also using xCloud and updating along the way. One of the coolest things is that you can turn it on so that it is the exact weather of wherever you're flying.
Mm-hmm.
That does sound really awesome, and I thought I heard something about a mode where you can just see the view, like you're flying. That's just amazing.
And here's the other thing: if you're the sort of person who says, "Well, I'm not good enough to do a flight simulator," they include the easiest Cessna, and it'll be easy teaching you how to fly that plane. You know, and from there on, you can move on. It's so deep. You can do a career sim of being a commercial air flight person, in which you gotta fly these. Here's the thing: you taxi your plane into the gate. The gate moves out, you know, for the passengers to get on. You have the the luggage being loaded onto your plane. You have your plane being fueled. You have to do your pre-system checkouts. People are getting into their seats. You got to tell everybody to put a, you know, sit and all that stuff. You take off. You get fly. And oh, by the way, this is another feature. Because this game is also online. It can play offline, but if it's online, it'll have all the flight data from control towers of that area if they have that model. So you'll actually have the actual flights in that area flying around you too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this, like I said, we've hijacked this letter to us just to talk about Flight Simulator 2020. It is jaw-dropping, and I think it's coming out in August. So,
if you crash your plane in the game, it deletes the game and never lets you back in.
Yeah.
No, I don't. That's true.
Yeah, you talk about roguelikes. That's the ultimate roguelike. First thing they're going to do is they're going to fly the plane over their house, maybe crash into it.
They revoke your flight license.
Hey, you know, I live in New York, and I saw my house in one of the things. Oh, the other thing is that one thing I was impressed to see was that you can see little traffic going around.
That's neat.
And you also have everybody – here's the thing. When they model all the airports, they have it so that everybody's doing their job around you. You know, so everything is independent of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, let's get back to Ralph here. I think
Gaming Flashback.
Gaming Flashback, yeah.
I have never even heard of this game. Which one was this?
That one was Amnesia: The Dark
Descent. Doom? Ah, okay. Strange. But regarding Doom, I was not able to play it back in the 90s because the sound made me sick. I mean, really sick. These bass-like sound, the bass-like sound for a longer time made me feel like I had to puke. That is, yeah, I don't know.
The soundtrack to Amnesia, it has that low,
low hum. Yeah, there are games that'll do that to me as well. Like if a certain sort of frequency is just in my ear, it'll make, and in addition to it being a first person game, which sometimes gives me motion sickness. I had that issue with Quake actually for a while. Quake 2 did that to me. I can deal with it, but like if I play Quake 2 for a very long period of time, it will mess with me.
The only sound I remember from Quake is Trent Reznor. That's about it.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, he did most of the music for it. But like it's just that thick, like very, very electronic bass heavy tone. Which I enjoy. I like the soundtrack to Quake 2. I actually keep it I keep a playlist of it loaded up on my YouTube when I feel like working to it. But it's just like playing that kind of first person shooter. It messed with me a lot. So I see where you're, I know exactly what you're talking about to a degree. Shroud and Ninja Mixer. These guys have enough money for the rest of their lives, so I don't care where they will go. They will have their fans anywhere. I don't like Mixer at all. Can't say why, but the look and feel is not mine. I can't say how it was for the streamer. I'm only telling an opinion as a streamer. The only time I go on Mixer is playing Jackbox Party with Jonah.
Yeah, because I run the Jackbox Party things every week. So, just so you know, TKO might as well be just called Draw Penis. Seriously, it's all most of the T-shirts are of penises.
That's funny. Sounds about right. Street Fighter V. I love to watch Street Fighter tournaments, especially on Evo and Capcom Cup. I don't think that the same feelings will ever come from an online stream. Sadly, it's the best thing they can do right now during the situation. Well, this may have come before Evo Online was canceled.
No, actually, it was canceled at the time, I believe. Let me check the notes.
But
No, it's Street Fighter V. Well, here's the thing. Street Fighter V Pros forfeit Capcom Pro Tour matches over lag.
Yeah.
I don't think they canceled Evo yet, did they?
Nope,
no, that was Capcom's tournament.
No, this was before the whole Smash scene and then Mr. Wizard allegations came out. So quite a few things have happened since then, and it's We'll see if FGC comes back anytime soon. I hope so, but like it's going to have to come back under new management.
I'll just come next week. And they have an entire year to figure it out.
Tom Cannon is a good person to put it under. He will probably do a good job. But thanks again. It's always fun listening.
No.
Oh, wait. And yes, Street Fighter 4 is way better than Street Fighter 5, in my opinion. Yes,
I don't think
true.
That's a controversial opinion. I've not heard a person say Street Fighter 5 is better than Street Fighter 4.
Street Fighter 5 has gotten to the point where it's acceptable, but it took a long time to get there, and even then it's kind of still meh. It's not as – Street Fighter 5 Arcade Edition is not as good as Ultra Street Fighter 4 was.
Well, here's the thing. I heard that when Street Fighter 4 for PC came out, that was it. That was pinnacle. Right? I mean, it got better, I'm saying. I'm just saying it's like this is everything Street Fighter 4 can be.
Yes. Like Ultra Street Fighter 4, there's always a point where Street Fighter games just like keep releasing new iterations like Ultimate Street Fighter, Hyper Street Fighter, the Street Fighter Twin Turbo, whatever. There's a point where they get to like their ultimate form. I think a lot of people would go ahead and argue that Street Fighter V Arcade Edition is Street Fighter V's ultimate form, and I would think that also people would argue that it's not as good as Ultra Street Fighter IV was, which I would agree. Stay healthy. Or no. Nope. Thanks again. It's always fun listening to you guys. Have fun. Having fun and hearing your opinions on all these topics. Stay healthy. I hope to hear from you next week. Greetings, Ralph.
Yeah. Well, guess what? This is next week, basically. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I got to check to see if we have any new iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chokes.
You can find me at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week. And next week should be a corker because that's when Microsoft's going to lift the kimono, basically.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Yep.
Very exciting.
The big thing about that is people are really, really, really hungry for Halo Infinite.
Yes. I think it's safe to say there's a lot riding on that game this year.
Yeah. Anyways, by the way, I also do have Death Stranding on Epic, so at some point I'm going to check that out.
Be prepared for a...
Yes, I know. Piss,
very weird
and
journey.
Mutant babies, and mutant fetuses.
Be prepared for, like... Okay.
This is fucking Hideo Kojima. I know what to expect, okay?
Don't go in there expecting, like, an action game or, like, a...
I know it's not an action game, but it also is Hideo Kojima, which means it's going to have some very strange writing.
It's going to be... Just take it in. Just take in the world. That's all I got
to
say.
I expect to see boobs at some point, too.
Yeah.
Or ass. Either one. It's Hideo Kojima. It's
yes.
Not that guy from Team Ninja, but was it Ninja? No, Ninja Theory I'm thinking about Team Ninja. Yeah,
Team Ninja is Dead or Alive. So
yeah.
Yes.
Although the guy, I forgot his name. You know, long hair, dark glasses. He left a long time ago, and when he was around there, it was like boobs in your face.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I mean, you're going to motorboat these puppies all game.
I mean, don't get them wrong. Dead or Alive 6 has a straight up, like, over $100 DLC pack, which is what you would expect from a Dead or Alive DLC pack. Mostly scandalous outfits.
What happened to their volleyball games?
Which were basically just, like, super elaborate dating sims.
It was super elaborate jiggle physics. That's what it was for. Anyways, we will see you next week with all the Microsoft stuff. Let me ask you, what else is scheduled for this coming week? I know Microsoft...
San Diego Comic-Con is also coming up this weekend.
That's true. Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, Gen Con Online is on the 31st. And just so you know, it's free.
Yep.
But that's next. That's the 31st.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually not San Diego Comic-Con. It's Comic-Con at home because they had to cancel the physical event.
Yeah, we know this.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I was actually going to be at Gen Con this year. I didn't apparently. Well, guess what? You don't have to worry about having a booking room in Indianapolis because it's not going to be here. Which is a pity. PAX Unplugged was also canceled, which is kind of sad. It was that I enjoy. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.